This is Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. I'm Steve Kraske. In 2019, on a 6-1 vote, the Supreme Court of Kansas determined that the state constitution guaranteed the right to an abortion. Now, six of the court's justices are up for attention, including Chief Justice Marlette Luckert. Today, how can voters learn about the justices up for attention vote so that they can make an informed decision? That's especially tough as the justices are barred from campaigning. We'll also review the selection process for Supreme Court justices and why some state lawmakers continue to talk about changing that process. With us, Carol Byers, a former justice on the Kansas Supreme Court. She served on the court from 2003 to 2020 and is working on an effort to retain the judges. Carol, nice to have you. Good morning.
Thanks, Steve. Glad to be here.
Steve Lieben is a Douglas R. Stripp Missouri Distinguished Professor of Law at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. He worked for 27 years as a judge in Kansas. Steve, nice to have you, too. Good morning.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Justice Byers, I think a lot of people, you know, myself included, expected a strong push by the anti-abortion crowd to oust the two justices who signed off on that 2019 ruling that guaranteed a right to an abortion in the state. But that doesn't appear to be happening, at least up to this point. How surprised are you?
Well, I would say I'm not surprised because this is a sort of a pattern that we see often when people are opposing people in retention elections. It has been a frequent occurrence in other states, and even here in 2014, when people had decided to oppose certain of the justices, that they didn't really reveal their hand until 2-3 weeks outside the election.
So you think the effort could be coming at some point in the weeks to come?
Still think it could be coming, and in fact, it's been talked about pretty openly by folks who intend to pursue it.
Judge Lieben, what do you think? How surprised have you been?
I agree with Carol. What we've seen in the past, in 2014, which is the closest parallel, there was a governor election going on. Sam Brownback was running for re-election, and he was campaigning around the state about activist judges. And then about 3 weeks before the election, a group actually surfaced with funding to oppose the two justices who were on the ballot that year, Eric Rosen and Lee Johnson. And the retention percentage went down to 53% in that election. Recently, Sam Brownback made a speech that was reported by the Wichita Eagle, and they noted that central to his strategy is unseating a majority of the Supreme Court justices. And he was apparently open about that in this call that was monitored by the Wichita Eagle. So I think there's activity out there, but it's not highly visible at this point.
And like Judge Byers, you're saying you might see it in the weeks to come here.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I should point out that of the six justices up for retention, only three were part of the 2019 court that found abortion to be a right within the state constitution. One of those three, Justice Caleb Stegall, was the lone dissenter in that case. Have those numbers diluted the push to reject some of these justices come November? Justice Byers, what do you think?
It's an interesting thought. I don't know that they have had an effect. The statements I've seen in various media, and of course, former Governor Brownback's was one of them, the one that Steve just described, have not been focusing in on specific justices. They've been more global, talking about sweeping out perhaps all of them. And this is we have a year that's a historical anomaly, with six of the seven on the ballot.
Right, right. And you had to survive your own retention vote in, 2014?
No, I was not on the ballot in 2014, but I had four different retention votes in the time I was on the Court of Appeals and then the Supreme Court.
And what was the slogan they used against you?
Well, I had the good fortune of having my last name rhyme with fire.
Yeah.
So you can imagine.
Yeah, fire buyer. Yeah, there you go. Well, Judge Lieben, this idea that judges have to face the scrutiny of voters will strike some people. You know, it's contrary to the idea of an independent judiciary. If judges are constantly looking over their shoulders at how voters perceive them, doesn't that undermine the independence of any judge?
Sure. What's happened, though, in the United States, in virtually every state, there is some check that the voters can have on their judiciary. Almost no state has gone with the pure federal model where you have lifetime appointment and are never there, never checked. What Kansas has done is try to come up with a compromise, actually very similar to what Missouri came up with for the Missouri plan,
right,
of selecting statewide appellate judges in a way that would on the front end, maximize focus on qualifications, but on the back end, leave the ability for the voters to be heard if the court truly went in some really odd direction or individual justices truly turned out not to be qualified.
Yeah. To what extent, Justice Beyer, do you think that your independence is compromised as a result of the fact that you have to go ahead and face voters every few years?
Not at all.
Really?
Yeah. I think that good judges who understand their position and their oath know that when they face a decision on a case, that they're permitted to consider three things only: the issues as framed by the parties and their counsel, the facts as demonstrated by admissible evidence in the lower court proceedings, and finally, the applicable rule of law. And what they don't consider includes what constituents may think, what voters may do,
but
what
even
the
in this
popular
climate,
opinion is.
Even in this intensely political climate that we're experiencing across the country right now?
I absolutely believe that.
Huh.
And I've watched them perform that way for over 20 years.
Yeah. So you were never thinking of the voters out there when you rendered your opinions then. I'm thinking about the abortion case in 2019. I'm thinking about a 2006 decision when the court ordered the state to pump more than $500 million into public education. You're saying you did that with a clear conscience.
Yeah, that was just not part of our job. We traveled as the Kansas Supreme Court. They continue to travel, do road dockets for a couple of days, twice a year. And one of the very first things that the Chief Justice would always say to the crowd who would come to those evening oral arguments is, we will not be taking a poll on how you think this should be coming out.
Hmm. And those traveling cases, that was designed to sort of give the public a peek into how you guys operated.
Absolutely. People can always come watch the court if they'd like in Topeka, but not many people take time out of their busy lives to do that. So the court on the road was designed to give people an opportunity in their own communities to watch the court work.
I can't help but wonder if the abortion decision of 2019 played at all into your decision to retire in 2020.
No. The principal reasons I retired had to do with a husband who had several years before and grandchildren who live far away.
Yeah. How about some of your colleagues who also retired in the months after that ruling?
I don't think it had anything to do with that ruling. I think their life circumstances had just come to a point where retirement was the sensible option.
You know, you surely knew that ruling would be a bombshell decision in a state like Kansas, even perhaps the most prominent ruling in a decade or more. Did the court struggle with that decision, or did the consensus form fairly quickly?
I think we struggled with it, but no more than we do with many. That's just the nature of the beast. Everyone who arrives at the court has, as my colleague has mentioned, are heavily vetted and highly qualified and certainly capable of arriving at sensible, logical reasoning on any side of a case, as any good lawyer can do. So our conferences were often lively and sometimes loud, but that was not limited to the cases that ended up being controversial for the public.
Hmm. Professor Lieben, what's the point of retention elections when it comes to our judges? Why do we do it?
Well, it's part of a compromise.
As you were saying.
That allows some citizen input, and in the merit selection system, it's designed to make that input focus mostly on qualifications.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, as compromises, it has pluses and minuses, but it does a good job of trying to insulate courts, choose based on qualifications on the front end, and keep politics as much out of it as possible.
You know, Justice Beyer, the other thing that strikes me as difficult about these retention elections is that the judges themselves can't campaign on their own behalves. What about that part of this, and how awkward does that make it for you guys who are up for election? You're on the ballot.
It is tough because judges and justices in Kansas can't really campaign in any conventionally recognizable way. So they're fairly limited to directing people to their opinions, which certainly any Kansan or anyone else who's interested can go to the kscourts.org website anytime and read any decision or all decisions if they're interested from a particular judge or justice.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one source of information, and it's the official Kansas Judicial Branch website. It has no color from any politics or point of view at all.
But, you know, nobody does that.
Well, I encourage them when they're particularly interested in a matter or something that's hit the news to go and actually take a look. And then we are doing our best to not only have the justices appear in public and let people get to know them a little bit as fellow human beings and public servants, but also those of us who are supporting them are getting out into the public and visiting about their qualifications and their performance.
Professor, how else can voters begin to understand the merits of these judges and whether they should be retained or not? Because on some level, it's asking a lot of a voter to weigh into issues they don't know very much about.
But in addition to the public appearances, which the court does go out and they make a variety of appearances at things like Rotary Club or Lions Club or that kind of thing. They're also on social media. Most of the justices up for retention have a Facebook page. In 2016, I was on the retention ballot that year and was being opposed based on my decision on abortion. I started my Twitter account that year. And there are a number of justices who are on Twitter. Justice Stegall was, I think, the first on the court to actually get active there. But it's useful for us to be out and as accessible as possible. So I think there are actually a number of places where you can find more information and get a sense of who these people are.
But outside of Twitter, where can they go? Where can voters go?
Well, the Facebook pages of these justices are there. Unfortunately, we used to have a commission that evaluated appellate judges. It was set up by the state, but during the Brownback administration, that was ended. It was publicly funded but took virtually no money and did surveys and evaluations of opinions. And I think that's something that would be very beneficial to have again. We just don't have it right now.
But if social media, if you're suggesting that social media is the primary pot of information for voters to go.
Well, I don't mean to suggest that.
Okay.
Carol mentioned the opinions that the justices have. And certainly, for example, if you wanted to look at the abortion opinion, if you pull up that opinion, the court quite rightly had essentially an introduction in the opinion that was an overview in the first few pages. You don't have to read the lengthy opinion. You can very quickly get an idea what was that all about and why did they come out the way they did.
You know, we checked the Kansas 2020 election results, and every justice, judge, and magistrate who stood for retention was ultimately retained. How likely is it that voters will reject any of the six who are up for retention this fall? Any sense yet, Justice Beyer?
I can't really be very definitive on that at this point, but I would say I'm hopeful that they'll all be retained.
Mm-hmm.
Judge Lieben mentioned just a few moments ago that the retention percentage back in 2014, when there was a late-term challenge and one that was part of the gubernatorial race and so had plenty of money behind it, that the retention percentages were down in the low 50s. And that's a phenomenon that we've been watching this whole time. When I first came to the Court of Appeals and then onto this Kansas Supreme Court in the early aughts, retentions were fairly sleepy affairs.
Mm-hmm.
Percentages were sometimes in the 80s and certainly 70s was kind of the norm. No one ever had to really worry about it. But they have continued to decline in the past 15 years in various retention elections. So the threat is there. And it's been disturbing to see that even just in the past few days, someone has published a push poll that's pretty untethered to the truth, as mm-hmm. those things tend to be. So the drums are beating and we're concerned.
And the poll suggests what?
The poll suggested just about everything you could suggest that might incite a voter to vote no.
Mm-hmm.
Typical okay. of those genre of tools. So I would say that I'm hopeful that the chances remain slim, but it's not that it has not happened in other places.
Yeah.
Voter challenges or interest group challenges, really, to justices in other states have been successful. And Steve, if I may, I do want to mention one other source of information. Not only does kscourts.org have the opinions and lots of other information about the Kansas judicial system, it does have biographical information about the various judges and justices as well. And I think voters find that helpful. And then finally, this year, the Johnson County Bar Association.
I was just going to ask if one of the bar associations weighs in here or not. Yeah.
They the Johnson County Bar in particular has a long tradition of doing performance evaluations for the judiciary at the trial bench level in Johnson County. And this year, that bar elected to do performance evaluations for both the Kansas Supreme Court justices and the Court of Appeals judges. Mm-hmm. We haven't mentioned them, but 7 of the 14 will be on the ballot as well. So they have all been subjected to the personnel performance type evaluations that the Johnson County Bar has done, and those results have been recently published.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're talking this morning about the retention of judges. That issue is going to be on the ballot in Kansas this November, and how voters should approach this whole thing. Judge Lieben, the other model, and we've mentioned this already, is the one we use for the U.S. Supreme Court, which is doesn't rely on retention elections. It's the lifetime appointment model. Kansas and many other states have opted not to go with that approach. What are the advantages of the lifetime appointment model, and what are the downsides?
Well, the only real advantage is the complete independence of the individuals once appointed.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure that any state has actually adopted pure federal model. Some of them have the same model with a very lengthy term of office.
Even longer than Kansas's.
Much longer than Kansas.
And Kansas's term is what again?
For Supreme Court justices, it's 6 years. Mm-hmm. Court of Appeals and district court judges, it's 4 years.
Mm-hmm. So other states have gone longer.
There are some states that I think go as much as 20 years. There's several with 12 years. But Kansas has opted for a merit selection system with a relatively short retention period, in addition to their being on the ballot the first election after they've served 1 year in office.
And yet some conservative Republicans a few years ago were talking about going to the lifetime appointment model, the U.S. Supreme Court model here in Kansas. And that was kicked around and it didn't ultimately pass, but it got some fairly serious consideration.
But what it lets you do as a governor or a president, if you are able to find someone who has no record, but you know their views, or who has a clear record and you know their views, you can load up a court for a particular purpose. And merit selection avoids that by having you look at qualifications with a body that sends up three names to the governor. The body has lawyers and lay people on it. The lay people are appointed by the governor, so there is that input of the political process, and then the ultimate appointment is made by the governor.
So again, you're describing the merit selection process where this commission comes up with three recommendations sent to the governor. The governor has a choice, has to make a pick from one of those three, can't go outside those three to make his or her choice there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And for my money, that's a much better system than the federal model in the state. Governors come and go, and I'm not really sure that we want any particular governor to be able to appoint four or five candidates who will have a lifetime appointment on the court and have some fixed view that may or may not be something we're interested in.
You know, Justice Beyer, we were talking about this other way to pick judges that would go against the merit selection process, this federal model that's used. But I haven't heard much talk about that in the last few years. Why is that?
There was some discussion of altering the constitutionally provided method for the Kansas Supreme Court last session. And that was, again, among the items that former Governor Brownback touched upon when he spoke a few weeks ago. So those ideas are still out and about. I would add to the discussion you and Judge Lieben were just having that in Kansas, generally, the federal model that's been suggested is something that I sometimes refer to as the federal model light, because it's truly not lifetime appointment. Mm-hmm. It would like to incorporate those elements of the federal system that are executive appointment with Senate confirmation. But most of the systems that I've ever heard discussed as substitutes also included a retention period.
Okay. Well, a good conversation, an important issue coming up on the ballot for Kansas voters in November. I want to thank Justice Carol Beyer again. She served on the Supreme Court from 2003 to 2020 here in Kansas. Steve Lieben is a distinguished professor of law at UMKC. He worked for 27 years as a judge in Kansas. Thank you both very much. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up to Date is a production of KCUR 89.3. Our theme music was composed by the great Bobby Watson. The program is produced by Danny Alexander, Zach Wilson, Elizabeth Ruiz, and Reginald David. Our engineer is Paul Nakatura. I'm Steve Kraske. Thanks for listening.